Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 218.JB4124. Certificate number 31277. Chopin's Heart. Is this one of those medical oddity shows?
Like, was his heart super weird?
Or like, is it in somebody's living room now or under glass?
Does it creep around at night when they turn off all the lights?
Do people get...
Does like, Chopin's heart murder people with an axe?
If you pay $10,000, can you eat a little piece of it?
Wow. What would that... Is that like a theme restaurant?
Yeah, just a little toothpick. It's like one of those places...
Tiny
like,
bits of your favorite celebrities are on sale now. You're like, wait, Ving Rhames is still alive. How is this... Well, how did you get this?
I mean, didn't you fly to Denmark to eat seaweed off the beach at some place where it was $10,000 for an ice cube?
Yeah. No, that's the movie The Menu. That didn't actually...
Oh, right.
That didn't happen in real life. That just happened in a movie. No, this has nothing to do with cannibalism. His heart was a little weird, though. I'm just gonna tease your interest.
Chopin, you say.
Like if your life was built on the idea that Chopin's heart was perfectly normal in every way, except that it maybe liked mazurkas more than yours.
Right, but if you were somebody that was like a musicologist and Chopin had been your whole career and you thought you knew everything.
And you were just wedded to his heart being totally normal in every way.
Yeah. And then
guess what?
You were listening to a podcast in the middle of the night. You were like, oh, I love their voices.
Let me just take a big drink of water and hope Ken says nothing about Chopin's heart being a little abnormal. What?
No.
I mean, I assume we're speaking to future listeners that have hearts, but... Not necessarily.
Think about a potential future listener's that doesn't have a heart.
There are animals. Not every animal has a heart. Can you name an animal that doesn't have a heart?
A paramecium.
Is that an animal? Isn't that protista? I don't know. How do the kingdoms work now?
An animal that doesn't have a heart.
I just found out fungi and plants are different, which kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, they're a third kind. They're a third path.
But weird, right?
Well,
couldn't they just be plants?
I mean, I'm not
like when I'm like making a salad, I'm not like, here's some plants. Oh, but this mushroom is not a plant. It's clearly something different drops it in.
I'm not so normative that I am not like fully into fungi being not plants.
Oh, you think I'm shaming
it
the
just,
fungi?
It just feels like you're like, why can't you just be like other plants?
Can't you just fit in fungi?
Yeah,
like fungi. It would just be so easy at Thanksgiving dinner, fungus, if you would just pretend to be a plant.
You're apparently such a fun guy.
Woo! Do you like... Hey, I've got a...
Yeah, thanks.
I just realized I had a bell.
Give it to me.
Let me see. There are animals without hearts.
Who?
Sea cucumbers. What if we're speaking to super hyper-intelligent sea cucumbers?
Sea cucumber is an animal.
Oh, because cucumbers are in salads like mushrooms? Now, wait a second, Ken. You were complaining about the mushroom in your salad.
Yeah, but is an urchin an animal?
A sea urchin is also an animal.
An animal.
Yes. So is a sea cucumber. Jellyfish don't have hearts.
Okay.
I guess if you're just a very simple kind of just a chill animal with a real chill vibe, you're
like me.
You're like, I just need to diffuse fluids throughout me. I don't need an open or a closed circulatory system.
Yeah, it comes in, it goes out. That's the only requirement for an animal.
Bugs don't even have blood, but they have hearts. It pumps hemolymph around them. Mm-hmm. So hey, if you're listening in a million years hence and you've got hemolymph pumping through you, let me just put it this way: if you don't have a heart, let me explain to you that in our time, almost every animal had a pump-like organ pushing fluids around their body.
What about scarecrows?
You're wondering if scarecrows have hearts.
Yeah.
I think famously they don't have brains.
It's brains they don't
it's
have.
It's tin men.
Tin men don't have hearts.
That's
scarecrows don't have brains, and lions don't have courage.
Lions are the biggest wussies
yeah.
in the animal kingdom.
Okay, apparently. Can't confirm.
I guess they're not. I guess what it implies is that lions are very brave. It's so ironic and comical that this one lion
is the one. But
so maybe it's also implying that scarecrows are smart and tin woodsmen are...
and they all have hearts.
Are compassionate.
And it's just these two that are like anomalous? Interesting.
That's why Dorothy's so surprised.
Weird take, but I like it.
Because otherwise there'd just be a steady stream of scarecrows going to the Emerald City wanting a brain. And yet the wizard never says, another scarecrow.
So
that's proof that all the other scarecrows in Oz are very bright.
So in your Oz cosmology, it's...
sorry, I did it wrong. Cosmology?
Tin men are zombies, it's scarecrows. They're like brains, like thousands of them converging.
No, they're all full of brains.
Scarecrows.
Oh, yeah. Scarecrows eat other people's brains. But why doesn't our scarecrow do it? Because he's an enlightened one.
Yeah, he's a fun scarecrow. He's a dancing scarecrow.
He just wants to dance. Uh-huh. I mean,
like me.
I mean, the movie, I guess I never understood this because, you know, every child watches and likes The Wizard of Oz, weirdly, even though it's 100 years old.
I'm not sure about that. I think I showed it to my daughter and she was like, ee.
Okay, well, for 100 years,
okay,
every kid watched The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, now she's like, no lightsaber battles, I'm out.
But we didn't understand that it was gay. No one had told us, kids, The Wizard of Oz is gay.
No, I learned it when I was 21.
Yeah, I think there's an age where you're like, oh, I guess they all like Judy Garland.
It's very gay.
And, you know, so she meets a chosen family of three kind of odd
from
guys.
Chosen? Are you saying they were Chinese?
No, I'm not saying that. Yeah, she dips them in hoisin sauce. No, they're the people that she picks up on the road. Because her own aunt and uncle are no help. Dorothy, mm-hmm. Where are you? I'm trapped in an hourglass or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're all not traditionally masculine.
Right.
They all like a little bit of soft shoe.
They're a little femmy.
One has an axe, but is like, oh dear, I hope they don't need me to use my axe. And then the lion is like, wah, you know.
Wait a minute. It never occurred to me that The Wizard of Oz was gay-coded.
It's not just Judy Garland.
Because they're gay.
Yes.
She
meets three gay men in the woods.
I always just assumed it was Judy Garland. Whoa, you're blowing my mind right now.
It's gay on every level.
Wow, because they are really gay.
So that's what makes the scarecrow, the tin man, and the lion different from other scarecrows, tin men, and lions. It's not just that they're not zombies or cannibals or whatever saying.
Heavens to Murgatroyd.
It's like, dear me, I hope they don't scare me.
That's kind of marvelous.
I guess it's not great that they're like 30s movie caricatures. They're like Franklin Pangborn caricatures of gay men. They're like, today if you were making Wizard of Oz and you were like, all the characters are gay. You would not be like, and they're huge sissies.
No, they'd be like,
you wouldn't insist
what's
upon
up?
It.
What's up?
That's right.
But I mean, you know, the wizard is gay or is wizard encoded. Like, not all wizards.
He could be gay coded. He's in a balloon.
Do you know what I mean? Like, not all wizards are like that. Some of them really know what they're doing.
I see. The fact that he's kind of ineffectual.
Yeah, we're just like, oh, sure, that's how all wizards
are.
Well,
gay people could be good at their jobs. Like, if I imagine a gay wizard and a straight wizard, the gay wizard might be better at casting spells. I'm just very open-minded that way.
100%, I'm going to just come right out. 100% gay wizards are better at casting spells.
Dumbledore is gay. Voldemort, I think, is maybe... Oh, maybe he is gay-coded. I don't even know.
No, I think Voldemort might be, like,
But he's like an angry teen with a diary. So that's kind of queer coded.
Yeah.
I don't know what all the fan fiction says, but I think most of them
is goth for sure.
Yeah, he's a goth.
Goth coded.
I'm
glad we worked all this out.
It doesn't really have much to do with Chopin.
If you're a young person who doesn't understand all the gay encoding of Judy Garland movies, turn to Ken and John on Omnibus.
I feel like we're the ones who can really walk you through this.
we got it all broken down.
It's a big marker of our allyship.
That's right.
Is that we will explain queer readings of The Wizard of Oz. Such an obscure queer text.
I know.
But somehow we're down with it.
I know. So weird.
It's amazing that we're up to speed on this.
I think all of this might make no sense to anybody that's under 45 years old. Because
watch Wicked.
Oh.
Especially.
Right.
I mean, maybe if they're straight, they don't.
Straight kids watch
The Wizard of Oz is so gay that even if you make a spin-off musical about it, it will be the gayest musical. that's the aura, the queer aura that the power of Wizard of Oz has.
Well, I know more than I did when I started this episode, and that's the sign of a good omnibus, and we're not even 10 minutes in.
But nothing about Chopin's Heart, you got to admit.
I
told you it was odd, but I didn't tell you how.
There's an hour left to the show.
I mean, Chopin is also possibly gay, so...
Is that right?
Heaven's to Purgatroyd.
Tell me more.
He's the kind of 19th century guy who wrote a lot of letters to close male friends about how much he wanted to like caress them and climb in bed with them.
Sure.
So you got half scholars being like, gay as a $3 bill.
Pretty gay.
And then the other half of the scholarly room is like, you have to understand, everybody back then wrote letters about how they wanted to crawl into bed with their male friends and caress them.
Sure.
So it's hard to say.
Yeah.
It was a different time. Anyway, know that our species had hearts. We only had one.
That's right.
Maybe you have multiple, and that's fine.
I mean, they're not counting the ones in the freezer.
The heart is important. You couldn't live without it.
Number one, would you call it? Yeah, you could live without a brain, but you couldn't live without a heart.
You could live without a brain. Yeah. I mean, you'd be brain dead, and you'd
you could live without most of your brain.
That's true.
You need some of it to run the heart.
You need the stem part.
Yeah.
The cerebellum to do all the autonomic stuff.
Right.
That's true. But your heart needs to do its stuff, or you die. And perhaps because of that, it's always had a great symbolic, like emotional or spiritual component to humans' self-conceptions of their selves.
At what point in history did people fully understand what the heart did? It has to be pretty early, right?
That's the funny part. It's like the 17th century. William Harvey is like, okay, here's how all the... Because the circulatory system is so complicated. And so even in civilizations where dissection is on the table, it's not always clear what's going on. Even Harvey didn't see capillaries. They're too small.
Too small.
And so what you have is for thousands of years, culture is just kind of guessing what the heart does, and they're almost always wrong.
Really?
Well, they agree that it must be the seat of the soul in some way.
All right, because it looks like where you would put a soul.
Do you think that's why?
Well, it's got rooms.
It's got rooms.
It looks like a little, it looks like a place.
My pancreas has islands, but my heart has chambers. Yeah, I guess we talked about when people figured out the brain was where you think. And
that didn't happen until the 50s, right?
Yeah, that happened some people still aren't sure, I think.
Right.
I mean, in the West, there tends to be this dichotomy where you think with your head and feel with your heart, but that's not really strictly observed. And there's plenty of cultures where, I mean, the Egyptians just, when they mummified bodies, they did not put the heart in a canopic jar. They left the heart in.
Is that right?
Because they thought it was so clearly the repository of the soul that you would need it at judgment. That when Anubis judges you, you don't need your brain.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't need your liver, but you're clearly going to need
your heart,
the thing that pumps your soul through you. In the Bible, the Hebrew word for heart, leb, appears frequently, and it appears to mean both mind and emotion, like really just the self.
The self.
Like there are scriptures where your heart has desire, where your heart has will. Like when you say, with all my heart, that shows that your heart has will, a decision-making power.
And that's from the Hebrew Bible? I have heart in this, or I...
Yeah, I wish it with all my heart.
Is in it.
He desired with all his heart. That's a biblical turn of phrase. Your heart has emotions. It can rejoice. It can be merry. But your heart can also speak truth.
Not mine, but yes.
The one.
Like, ones.
One, you know, depending on how your medications are balanced. I mean, ones, medications. Your heart can even think in the Bible. Like, your heart has thoughts.
That are separate from yours?
No, I think the...
Is your heart like, hey,
buddy.
Hey,
buddy. You should smoke that cigarette. No, the thoughts of my heart are part of you, but it's not like, unlike your brain, which is thinking.
It's kind of, yeah, right. It's like your emotional side.
That's true in like kind of Hindu thought, like in Sanskrit, the seven chakras, the heart chakra is associated with love and compassion. The Chinese referred to the heart as the center of the self or where the soul was located.
Well, now why?
That's the great question. Why did everyone think, in the absence of any, you know, anatomical evidence, that their heart was them?
The number of future links that are composing emails to us now with their own theories.
I think it's pretty well understood. So when you get to the Greeks and then the Romans, you know, the Greeks knew that the heart was central, but they thought it was not necessarily a liquid pump. They thought it was a furnace, basically. It provided calidum innatum, vital heat to the body. And they knew from seeing dead bodies on the battlefield or from in a slaughterhouse, they knew that there was liquid in these tubes that connected to your heart, but they weren't really wedded to that. Like, I think they were like, well, the veins are filled with blood. Sure. We know your veins have blood in them, but there's also the arteries. That's a whole separate system. They didn't know it was closed. That's clearly a whole separate system. And that's not just blood. That's also pneuma. That's like the heated air of life that your heart is blowing through you. And that's what makes you, you. Like, they thought we were like those car lot waving dudes where your heart would blow air through you. And that's what would make you alive.
But on the battlefield, they surely have seen spurting blood from wounds.
Right. But for whatever reason, maybe, I don't know, did they not see arterial blood?
They surely did. They were all trying to chop each other's heads off at all times. It's number one thing.
Not like
they
the
did.
Tin Man.
No. In the ancient world, it was like, what did you do
today? I won't use my axe, Dorothy.
I've chopped somebody's head off. Good man.
But their knowledge of the circulatory system was just all wrong. Like, they thought that a vein connected your heart to the fourth finger on each hand, and that's where we get our tradition of wearing the ring finger.
That seems kind of cool. That's like a little goth.
It's your vena amoris. I mean, that's not a ancient turn of phrase. That's like medieval Europe saying, the vena amoris. But
fourth finger.
But there actually are Greek anatomists saying, yeah, your fourth finger is uniquely connected to your heart. So if you're going to wear some sign that shows your love or regulates your love, it would be on that finger. And so you have medieval thinkers being like, just as the Greeks do, I will put a band on my finger to show my love for my true lady.
Is that, I can see that. Like, as part of my love and marriage, I'm going to choke off my heart finger.
It keeps me from having too much love for other women that don't look like her, you see.
It stops it. But is there any corresponding feeling in acupuncture or pressure that the fourth finger plays any role in anything?
I believe no, because the Chinese actually would have known what the Greeks did not know, which is there is no such magic vein connecting your fourth finger to your heart. This was like an incorrect idea.
The Chinese had done more in terms of dissecting people?
I'm not going to say they're like weirdos just dissecting people, but they had more sophisticated knowledge. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I believe that that's true.
I think the reason why the heart was associated with the self in a way that we do not do today.
Do we not,
or the
though?
Soul? I mean, we do metaphorically, for sure.
I see.
That's what this whole entry is going to be about, that we still have the vestiges of I am my heart, even though we've all been to the doctor and we know it's just a squeezy muscle.
Yeah.
It's a doggy toy.
According to what we know now.
If we don't limit ourselves to evidence-based medicine.
Sure.
Like now that that's out the window in all institutions and governments.
What is it that keeps the heart beating, Ken, if not love?
That's right.
The boom, fifth. Boom, 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 boom.
It's slowing down. Boom, it stopped.
Boom, boom, boom.
Generally, historians and people who have thought about this agree that the reason why that humans became so fixated on the heart as the soul is just because emotions seem to be felt in the chest.
Oh, sure. You get that,
like if you're sad, if you're happy, if you're in love.
I only know one of those emotions.
I said if. There's a 2013 study that was done by some Finnish and Swedish scientists. And I guess they did it on both Finns and Swedes as an evidence of their of how they're going to transcend cultural beliefs.
Sure, two of the most emotional cultures.
We tried both Finns and Swedes. So we have universalized our results. But basically, they have people experience emotions. I don't know how this worked. I don't know what the stimuli were. But then, and then they, you're supposed to point on the doll to where the feeling touched you.
Right. Here's some salted fish. How do you feel? All right, I'm taking the salted fish away. No. How do you feel? No, okay.
I'm very anxious.
I'm giving the salted fish back.
Relief, pleasure.
Now I'm giving salted fish to your friend.
Oh, Schadenfreude. Yeah. Emotions that appear to be most, and you can see on this diagram, like, you know, the lower limbs are implicated in other emotions more than the upper limbs, for example. Some appear to be in the head, some appear to be in the body. I don't mean those lower limbs. I mean like sadness pulls up in your legs. But irrespective of whether they were, whatever kind of people they were, Finnish or Swedish, but we have both kinds of music here, Finnish and Swedish.
Sure.
Emotions, very primal emotions like anger and fear, and to a lesser degree, anxiety, appear to be almost solely in the chest. And
that's an awful lot of the emotions.
That's really most of your emotions if you're an evolving mammal.
The strong ones, at least. Well, how does this play? Can you finally explain the humors to me and how this factors into that, or is that not in your notes?
The humors are medieval. I think the humors kind of post-date the classical period where people were first deciding what the heart did. So I don't think, I mean, the humors do rely on different fluids.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten rid of the Greek idea of you've got, but I think the medieval doctor still thought, yeah, your heart's pumping vital heat in the form of hot air through your tubes.
Heating up that yellow bile so that it is viscous.
And a lot of their theories of medicine did revolve around heat for this reason.
Do you need blood letting?
Yeah. Like, do you need to be cooled off by letting blood? Do you need to be heated up by angering up your blood? So it's related to the humors, yeah, I guess, even if they're, you know, wrong about the air component. But the reason why we feel these kind of fight or flight emotions like anger and fear in our chest is just because that's where the vagus nerve from the brain goes, you know, because, you know, the important evolutionary thing is to protect the chest cavity, the heart and the lungs. So, and that's where your adrenal glands are. So you feel these, whatever that contraction is.
Well, there's a real physiological reason why your heart gets in your throat?
That's right.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that was just your brain like
messing with
you.
Well, some of it is metaphoric. Like the authors of this Finnish-Swedish study just take for granted that butterflies in your stomach is purely semantic, that you don't actually feel stage fright in your stomach.
But of course you do.
But yeah, I think there's a queasiness that's associated with that. Like there's a digestive component to a case of nerves when they're severe. But people do literally feel positive emotions too. Like love, that's something that comes, it feels like it comes from the chest, even if nobody has told you, whether you're Finnish or Swedish, even if nobody has told you, the heart is the seat of love, you still kind of perceive a warmth in your core.
It does wash over you, right? That's what we say.
Yes.
Which again is fluid.
It does feel like it's washing over you, right?
Love.
And that's true of adrenaline too, or even getting your caffeine when you need it. That kind of appears to come radiate from your chest outward, right?
Well, I mean, an anxiety attack for sure feels like both a heart attack and also a kind of like, I can't breathe almost.
Anger and fear are mostly in the chest. Anxiety is, the great thing about anxiety is in the chest and the head equally. So you really, get that 1-2 punch that keeps you from actually solving any of your problems. But, you know, breathing and heart rate are the things that needed to be elevated by the anger and fear response.
Right.
So you feel it in your breathing and your heart rate first.
And you jump.
And so that's why you think, this is me. This is where my emotions are. They're happening all down there. And so for thousands of years, we've thought of the heart as a super, kind of the center of myself, my soul, the individual. And so there was this tradition dating back to at least the 12th century. We have examples of people wanting, you know, once embalming became a practice where this was possible, people wanted their organs removed And sometimes they wanted their heart or their entrails buried separately.
Huh.
Sometimes, you know, a lot of times just for convenience, you know, like...
that doesn't sound very convenient to me. So well, convenience is throw the person in a hole.
Well, well, if I wanted, if there was someplace I wanted to be buried, my body's going to have to be dumped close to where I died.
Oh.
Because embalming is not so advanced.
But I can carry my heart.
But I can put my organs into... It can pickle my organs and
take it to Mumbai.
Alcohol or something, and they can go someplace important to me.
Yeah.
So if I don't die near my ancestral home or my birthplace, the place of my greatest achievement, my where my family is buried, the answer would be, oh, well, just put your organs, put your viscera or your heart in a bottle and take that somewhere.
You could feed the heart to a cat and then take, the cat.
Would you believe me if I said that a cat eating a heart is about to become a part of this story?
No way.
How did you know?
I'm just one of those kinds of thinkers, Ken. I'm outside of the box. Ken, you and I are both on record as loving Factor meals. They only take 2 minutes to make. They're like healthy, dietitian approved. We both have spent all winter kind of cozying up to our Factor meals when there isn't another option or we're not going out for dinner or whatever. There's not a dinner party. But now here we are in the summer, and Factor has a whole new summer menu, and there are a lot more reasons to eat Factor in the summer even than you might think. Like, what do you think is your number one reason that you love Factor? Is it that the food arrives fresh and ready to eat? Is it that there are 45 weekly menu items that you can pick gourmet meals that fit your summer gains and your summer weight goals? Ken, am I right? You're fitting into those suits pretty nicely, but wait. Shush, 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 shush. Do you choose calorie smart, protein plus keto to keep your television body? Factor powers my day sun up to sundown. I enjoy their nutritious breakfast, their on-the-go lunches, their premium dinners, and for a chubbins like me, their guilt-free snacks and desserts. Factor has my whole day covered. So, Ken, I know you and I get our Factor meals drop-shipped from Factor HQ, but for our listeners, so that they can enjoy Factor meals like we do, go to factormeals.com/omnibus 50 off. That's omnibus 50 off, and use the code omnibus 50 off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's omnibus 50 off at factormeals.com/omnibus50off for 50% off plus free shipping. Again, when our listeners use factormeals.com/omnibus50off. It allows Factor to know all the great work that we're doing on their behalf in the world and all the marvelous gifts we're giving to our fans. So be sure to use omnibus50off as your code at factormeals.com/omnibus50off. Thanks, Ken.
This is
I have zero understanding of why I said cat.
It's your amazing emotional intelligence. You were like, looks like a guy who's going to shortly tell me a story about a cat eating a heart.
Mm-hmm. I could read it in your eyes.
So originally it would, you know, we know about the famous cases because, well, they were well-traveled enough to want to have part of them buried somewhere else. And they had the means to make it possible. You know, they weren't just getting dumped in a hole like most people were.
Right.
You know, maybe there are dumb Kevins who are like, put my heart by the lake, but who knows if anybody actually observed that. But, you know, we know that when Henry I died, you know, his body was buried at Reading in Berkshire, but Henry was a Norman king, which meant
he wanted to go back to
across the Channel.
Yeah.
Even though he had been born in Britain on the island of Great Britain, he wanted his heart sent back to the family seat, and so his heart can still be found at Rouen Cathedral in Normandy, where the Normans were from, and also other organs. I think it wasn't just his heart. Robert the Bruce, his body is buried at Dunfermline Abbey in Fife, but he had fought in the Crusades, and so on his deathbed...
He wanted it in Jerusalem?
He wanted to be in the Holy Land next year in Jerusalem. So he entrusted his heart to James Douglas, a nobleman who I think he knew was headed back to the Holy Land. And James Douglas said, absolutely. And he wore Robert the Bruce's heart in some kind of a box around his neck as he boarded his boat.
What a drag.
On his way to Jerusalem.
Although maybe you think that's amazing.
I mean, back then it was okay for two men to caress each other and wear each other's organs around their necks. It wasn't gay at all.
It sounds kind of like Angelina Jolie
and Billy Bob Thornton. You're just saying it's a drag, like you don't want a big clunky box around your... Maybe that's he took it off to sauna.
I bet he did.
Probably.
And then he got to Acre and he just buried it in a hole there. He didn't make it all the way to Jerusalem.
That is exactly what happened.
What's going on with me today?
You have you can just tell what the Crusaders are going to do. That's your bearded white man ability.
It is.
In any situation, power. I know what the Crusaders... James Douglas got diverted to Spain where the Spaniards were fighting the Moors and immediately gets himself killed fighting the Moors in Spain and never makes it to Jerusalem. So somebody got Robert the Bruce's heart back to Scotland. So it's now buried in a different part of Fife.
Oh, wow.
Which must be very disappointing.
They actually went to the trouble of like, we got to get this heart back up there.
But nobody took it to Jerusalem.
Huh. It seems like we could do it now.
Heist movie idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to steal the heart of Robert the Bruce from whatever church in Scotland it's in.
It's like some kind of Scottish independence.
That's right.
Like, we're never going to be independent until we get Robert the Bruce's heart out of here.
We're going to take it to a part of the world whose sovereignty is totally uncontested. Jerusalem.
You know, the Scots don't have a quarter of Jerusalem.
That's true.
We could divide Jerusalem into eight.
The Scottish part.
And give the Scots a part.
They should just get a very narrow wedge. It's like the Antarctica thing where you could see for some reason Argentina has like the whole South American pie slice. Just give every nation on earth a tiny, tiny wedge of Jerusalem.
You know, that would solve everything.
It would.
If every nation on earth had a slice of Jerusalem. Real easy to walk around. Now you're in Bolivia.
Unfortunately, the American one is divided among the Ivy League schools. So who knows what their policy will be. A guy named Pierre David was the mayor of Verviers, today in Liège, Belgium. He died in 1839, asking that his heart be removed from him and buried under a special fountain in Verviers so that the city could constantly spew his life out of a fountain. Unfortunately, he died in 1839, and his heart just sat in a box in City Hall until 1883, you know, Seattle process.
Right.
And at which point, somebody in Verviers finally built the fountain, and they dug out his heart and buried it in the stone under the fountain.
I've seen the fountain.
Oh, you've been there?
Yeah. Liège is a great little place.
I was just naming some random place in Liège, and you're like, I walked across it.
Yeah, I walked all over it. I got up on the fountain and I peed on it.
No.
No, I did not.
And now we come to Thomas Hardy, the great English novelist whose ashes you may have seen when you were walking across Westminster Abbey because he's in Poets' Corner.
I was just there.
Oh, did you go to Poets' Corner?
I did.
That's worth a trip.
It was great.
There's
all these things and they're all great.
There's a new part of the Abbey they've opened up like on some upper floor where they've got all the weird gargoyles they found in a remodel.
Oh, I didn't see that.
There's like a new part of the tour. So if you've been to Westminster Abbey and you've been not going back, there's new stuff.
New stuff. Second floor.
But Thomas Hardy's body is not one of them. His ashes have been there since he died in the 19th century. But as you may or may not remember, his work is all set in the semi-fictional English shire of Wessex.
There is a Wessex.
In his books, Wessex exists up until Victorian times. It is not...
As its independent kingdom?
Well, no, but as a geographic polity that is not just parts of Dorsetshire and Devon and whatever else.
Right.
So he wanted his body to go back to his beloved Wessex, or as a normal person would say, Dorset. Mostly because, you know, he was happily remarried, I think in London, to a second wife in his old age, but his beloved Emma, his first wife, was resting in Stinsford in Dorset. He wanted his heart to go back to her.
How does his beloved second wife feel about that?
Florence was apparently not consulted.
This has got to be a semi-frequent thing in ye olden times because people were often buried next to their one spouse with another one hanging in the wind.
Maybe they were all just the understanding kind of second wife and they weren't all like, burn all your pictures of Emma or I'm leaving you. I don't know why they're talking like that in this story.
That's how they do.
At some point, so his heart was taken back and buried next to Emma, but at some point, and who knows how this rumor would start if it weren't true, it'd have to be very malicious. The rumor began that after Thomas Hardy's heart had been removed, it had been eaten by a cat.
Whoa!
Stymieing his desires. But a vast cover-up clicked into action, and a pig's heart was deployed, was found and deployed, and buried next to Emma Hardy.
See, God in Wessex. Knows the difference.
So someday in the afterlife,
Thomas Hardy knows the difference.
If there's an afterlife, the first thing I want to do is to approach the throne of God and say, God, thou art omniscient.
Yes.
And he'll say, yes, my son. And he'll say, and I'll say, God, did Thomas Hardy's cat really eat his heart, resulting in a pig's heart being buried next to Emma at Stinsford in Dorset? And then I'll get the, and he'll be like, Ken, because thou hast been good and faithful and the Joe Rogan of the left, I will tell thee this thing. And then I'll know.
Do you feel like this is an example of you kind of trying to impress God with like some
Some trivia?
Yeah, because most people are like, hey, God, you know, blah, 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 something dumb. Like, where are my 72 virgins? And you're like, God.
Here's one I bet you don't get very often. I do get this. I do get this when I ask for every time I do a Q&A, there's somebody who's like, I'm going to ask you something. Yeah. No, I bet nobody's ever asked you this. And sometimes it's cool because it'll be like, what's your favorite monster truck? But sometimes it's somebody who just like asking some dumb thing that I've been asking.
How often are they like, mail trucks?
It's rarely omnibus related.
Did I tell you I was at a taping of Jeopardy? I don't know if you know this.
I did know this because you wandered around the lot to such a degree that the police were called, and that's how I found out about it.
The police.
Police weren't called.
Sony police.
Lot security was involved.
But as I got up at one point to use the restroom and an intermission, one of the other guests of the Jeopardy program was like, you know, sidled up to me and said, mail trucks or whatever.
Is this the hanky code of I'm going into the restroom?
And I said, mail trucks. Omnibus listener, eh? And he had just graduated from law school and was going to see
our youngest listener.
Yeah, going to see Omnibus on his way.
Going to see Jeopardy.
Going to see Jeopardy.
Omnibus the game show.
On his way, he was traveling, I guess, going back home or something. We stopped and had a nice conversation, and he was obviously very appreciative.
He
of
might
the
be
show.
Listening now, so don't say anything weird about
him. No, he was very nice. Everyone else there at Jeopardy was 85 years old and was just like, why would a young person like you be here at the show?
They would listen to Omnibus if it were on AM radio or NPR.
Yep.
But because it's a podcast, it's forever withheld from them. Just like young people can't watch Jeopardy because they don't have an antenna.
Oh, they watch it with their grandparents.
They'll torrent it.
Yeah.
They can stream it starting later this year.
Oh, what a nice plug.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that nice?
They can stream it.
Isn't that crazy?
Like what? Like all 50 years of Jeopardy you can just watch like in a giant marathon?
I don't know what I can reveal, but it's not the kind of show you have to watch in order. I'll say that.
Okay.
Will I understand?
Unless you want to watch
Will I understand
your 75
season 42
victories?
Of Jeopardy? I think there will be opportunities to watch last night's Jeopardy on streaming. I think there will also be other opportunities to watch
vintage
Jeopardies, including some that have never been available. And I think there will be, I think Jeopardy will maintain its own archive as well. So it'll be pretty expansive.
I noticed in watching it that there was some kind of montage of like Jeopardy's in the past, or maybe that was just in my imagination.
Were you having a,
whoa.
And you were there and you were there, Tin Man?
And I was there. But I noticed a big difference between when the Jeopardy categories were actually physical boxes that flipped.
Oh yeah,
and then they were televisions, individual televisions.
In the 60s, it was a piece of cardboard getting removed.
Yeah, and then it was like some kind of like game where somebody would turn, like almost Wheel of Fortune style, turn a little box that had the.
Those are called trilons, and I don't think the Jeopardy has the Jeopardy clues ever been trilons.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
It was all a dream, but
they're called trilons because they're like those three-sided billboards that can show you
right. But the over the years, like sometimes there was a big sign that said Jeopardy and other times there was not a big sign that said Jeopardy. And now you're kind of in the middle, like says Jeopardy, but it's not like,
well, when the show came back on the air, the set was basically made of the letters in the word Jeopardy.
Yeah. Right.
I have a friend, my friend owns the J.
That it keeps where?
For a long time in his garage, where he also had all this other priceless and mostly contraband. Game
Hollywood
show
ephemera.
Game show ephemera. Yeah, the Family Feud center console. and a Plinko chip.
Was he just a dumpster diver?
Collector, or? And a lot of it was liberated from dumpsters.
Huh.
He was also a TV executive. He wasn't just some weirdo whose mom let him keep all this stuff in the basement. But he's donated it all to, there's going to be a game show collection at a museum in upstate New York. So someday you will be able to see the Jeopardy.
Famous day. Locus of game shows.
I wanted to mention one more person who had their heart buried separate from them.
I thought you were going
to
say eaten by a cat, but go on.
In this case, not eaten by a cat, thank goodness. Queen Marie of Romania, when she died.
Wasn't she like one of the last Romanian royalty?
Yes, this fits into this story because she wanted her heart to be buried at Stella Maris Chapel, the chapel in her favorite palace, Balchik Palace, which was like a beautiful seaside castle in what is now Bulgaria. Unfortunately, before her death, the Bulgarians were given back Bulgaria, and she no longer had access to her favorite Romanian castle. So her daughter, the princess, built a copy of the Stella Maris Chapel in a different castle in still Romanian Transylvania, and buried her mom's heart in a replica of the chapel she loved.
Are you going to ask God about this too?
I don't know what my follow-up question would be.
Well, just like, does that count?
God, does that count?
I mean,
was she a bad daughter? Should she have snuck into Bulgaria like SEAL Team 6, come out of the water above the castle and buried the heart right there under the Bulgarians' noses?
But the implication is that her mom is going to come out of her heart by the fake chapel, but not leave.
The implication is that the mom was more into the decor of the chapel
than
the spot in Bulgaria, which is probably not true.
I mean, but could you feel the vibes of the fake chapel?
Was it Balchik Palace-esque? Was it Balchik Palace-coded?
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Heavens to Murgatroyd, even.
You've walked across the Balkans.
Well, yeah, Romania and Bulgaria.
Have you been Balchik-pilled? Did you go to this place?
No, but they're massively different countries. They have almost no resemblance to one another.
It's the mountains versus the Adriatic, right?
Well, they both have mountains, weird mountains. The Romanians have way bigger mountains. But no, one of them's a Latin culture and one of them's a Slavic one. They couldn't be less alike.
The idea, you're saying the daughter is trying to fool the ghost. Like if the ghost pops up, she'll look around and be like, oh, great. I won't go outside. This is clearly Balchik Palace.
This is exactly what I wanted. I asked for this.
Well, you're right. And in a lot of legends, the ghost doesn't leave. The ghost is confined to the house, right?
Right.
You never hear, the ghost is never like, and now I'm going to do some errands.
Yeah. You're never like sitting in your living room and a ghost walks in and they're like, I'm from Ukraine. I'm just wandering the world.
Or even when you're outside, a ghost doesn't come by and say, hey, I live over there.
Right.
But I'm going for a walk to make sure the castle is still located where I thought it was.
Yeah. Or say, this cul-de-sac is really bad urban planning, but somebody came along and cut down this vine and now it's freewheeling. I'd just like to thank them. They probably aren't being thanked by the local kids because nobody cares. But as a ghost, I saw the whole thing go down.
The story to me is about how really I should be making more replicas of my childhood surroundings, right? How awesome is this that she built her mom's favorite room just to bury a heart in? Like, why am I not rebuilding my childhood living room with its Atari 2600?
And what are you going to do, build a replica Gangnam in Finney Ridge? Well,
it doesn't have to be. Yeah, I would like to build... I mean, do I remember my childhood bedrooms enough to rebuild them on Seattle? I need to get Nathan Fielder to rebuild my childhood bedroom.
I would need a blue metal bunk bed.
Where am I going to get all the choose your own adventure books? I had a red wooden bunk bed.
Uh-huh. Oh, it was wood. Yeah. Oh, fancy.
Yeah. It must be nice, Ken.
Let's see. What else was in my bedroom? I had a couple of red shag pillows that I think I still have.
If I go through my parents' house, I can reconstruct a lot of my bedroom because they never threw anything away. Like they're going to have every Beatles record on cassette tape still because probably the same ones I had sitting on my shelf.
What about your baseball cards?
They did not throw away my comics or my collectible cards.
Nice. Thank you, Jenny.
Let's hear it for mom and dad. But you know, the most famous story in this genre of someone being buried separate from their heart is probably the composer Frédéric Chopin, because it's a pretty good story on a couple levels. He's famously Polish. You've walked across Poland?
No.
Have you been to Poland?
Yes.
A couple times? Once?
Yes, a couple of times.
Are they still pretty Chopin-pilled? there? Like, is every third thing named for Chopin in Warsaw?
Well, it seems like the first time I went to Warsaw, they were just still like, whoa, whoo, we're off the hook. Now what?
It was just after the wall came down?
Yeah, and they're like, let's hope the Germans don't come back. And then the next couple of times they were like...
That's on the flag of Poland. It says, let's hope the Germans don't come back.
There are still shadows on the wall for where they took down all the signs.
Yeah.
And then the last couple of times they were like, we are full on Euros now and we're going to be big Euros. We're tired of being treated like third class.
What does that just mean? They love Robin Williams?
No, they're like, our economy is going to be one of the big ones.
I see.
We just need a little bit more time. And then the British are going to stop treating us like cleaning ladies and start realizing like we're the big power.
As I understand it, they don't have a national symbol more potent than Frederick Chopin. Yeah, a Romantic era composer
really
is like as good a symbol as they like. Their Elvis, their Uncle Sam, their Mount Vernon, all in one.
What about Lech Walesa?
He's great.
Yeah,
he's great.
What about
still alive? I think he's like on tour. I think he's coming to like Town Hall or something.
What about Zbigniew Brzezinski?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I guess
about
he's
that.
An American.
Yeah, all the other Poles I can name are also Polish Americans. So.
Yeah. What about?
I mean, there are some great Polish poets.
What about Wojciechowicz?
From Barney Miller?
Yeah.
Is he Polish or Czech? He's Polish.
He's Polish. Yeah, Wojciechowicz.
I could not tell you which consonant-filled names are Polish and which are Czech. So I'll take your word for it, though. Because you've walked across Europe.
Yeah, that's right, but not across Poland.
Or across Barney Miller.
But I have walked across all of Brooklyn, and there are great sections of Brooklyn that are like, or at least used to be, just full-on Polish neighborhoods. Like you'd walk into a store and be like, can I get a this? And they'd be like, they'd just speak to you in Polish.
Well, America, particularly the Midwestern Polish parts of America, has, what, Tadeusz Kościuszko?
Yeah, right.
The great hero of Polish,
well, wait
born
a minute.
Hero of the Revolution.
What about Pope, John Paul?
The Pope. Yeah, souvenir stands are going to have a lot of the Pope. Don't get me wrong.
What about Roman Polanski?
But there's maybe not so much. You are now going through you haven't even left Google. I bet you're on the Google served list of famous Poles.
No, I'm just coming up with these. The two that I came up with besides Wojciechowicz are the Pope
and Roman Polanski. Because Polanski has Pole in his name. That's how you thought of it.
It's the ski that gives it away.
What about Jackson Pollock?
He's Polish?
I don't know. Why would he?
Oh, because it says Pole.
Why would his name be Pollock if he wasn't?
I think it's the ski. And that was the old, like, that was a slur you would call every Polish guy.
Oh, skis?
Ski.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I get all my slurs mixed up. It's Generation X problem. So many slurs, so little time.
Bring back weird slurs against different kinds of white people, I think. Like, that's how reparations work.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Everybody gets a bad slur. Well, we've already slandered the Swedes, the Finns, the Poles, the Bulgarians, and the Romanians.
Not to mention the people of Wessex.
Right.
Who
heart eaters.
Who are burying pig hearts.
Oh, also the residents of Jerusalem, all crusaders.
Fife Scotland, and the Greeks who didn't know what the arteries were for.
Dummies.
Morons. So Chopin... Yeah, my understanding is there's still many a street, park, memorial, everything named after Chopin.
I must have either missed it or ignored it.
Well, you're a musician. You shouldn't care about Chopin.
100% true.
He was a great prodigy as a child, and as a young man headed to Paris to continue to study his craft. I guess he tried Italy first and couldn't arrange whatever the visa troubles were. So he ended up going from Poland to Paris. Unfortunately, he left in 1830.
A lot going on then.
A lot going on in Poland then. The the Congress of Vienna had, 15 years earlier? Is that 1815? Had made, after the Napoleonic, had redrawing post-Napoleon Europe, had made Poland, which had until then been not independent,
Right.
Part of maybe the Russian Empire,
Russia and all around.
They had created the Congress Kingdom of Poland, which was semi-autonomous. But when places have semi-autonomous in the name, it doesn't tend to hold out or go well.
It doesn't lean toward the autonomous side of that. It
right.
leans
Nature
toward the
abhors
semi.
A semi-autonomous polity, right. As the saying goes. And this was a case where that certainly happened as the years went by. Tsarist Russia exercised more and more dominion over what should have been the Congress Kingdom of Poland to the degree that it was effectively just a province of Russia. And that led to the November 1830 uprising, just 1 month after Frederick Chopin leaves Warsaw for Paris. His country is at war against the Tsar.
Maybe he was the thing holding it together.
They were like, hey, Chopin's gone. Let's party. Well, all of his expat friends in Poland headed back.
Oh, to fight.
To fight the Tsar. And Chopin didn't.
Was like, meh.
You know what? The funny thing is, it's kind of interesting. I was trying to figure out Chopin's vibe here. Like, why didn't Chopin go back? Because he, for the rest of his life writing home, he says, you know, I go party. I travel the continent. I drink all the champagne.
But I miss the borscht.
But then I go back to my hotel and I cry in my pillow because I'm not with you, Mama, in Warsaw.
He's just BSing his parents.
Well, that's kind of what it sounds like. Nobody made you travel the continent going to all these parties, Chopin. But also, like, by the accounts of all his friends, he really was very melancholy in Paris. Like, just his father was French-born. His father was a French emigre who had come to Paris. But despite the fact that he had legit French ancestry, he felt very alienated and alone in Paris. He never felt at home there. He never felt like his French was very good. So he felt like just an unhappy exile all his life, even though literally every other Pole he knew had headed home to fight the Tsar. And many, I think, did not make it because the hammer was lowered and Poland again became, in effect, a Russian province for many, many years to come.
Right.
But he described himself as just like a living corpse, you know. He wrote home, even in his diary, he wrote, with graves behind me and beneath me everywhere, a gloomy harmony arose within me.
Gloomy harmony.
And he expressed it through his music. You know, he thought that, you know, what he could do for Poland was to keep Poland alive by bringing its native musical and artistic forms into the Romantic movement in Paris. So, by bringing before the world the mazurkas and the polonaises of his childhood. And he wrote very sad. I mean, he probably didn't write a piece as iconic as his Marche Funèbre, you always have to try not to make it the Empire Strikes Back march. Bum, 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 ba-da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, uh-huh, funeral march.
Not bum, 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 ba-ba, bum, ba-ba. You have to really try to turn it to Chopin. And I guess there's kind of a consensus among scholars that this was the sadness of Poland being expressed from many countries away. 10 frontiers away is what he would often say because of all the borders he would have to cross to get back to Warsaw.
What is it about Slavic culture that is so morose?
The weather?
I guess, but they're morose all the way down into Serbia.
It's true. They have beautiful coastal castles until the Bulgarians repossess them.
Yeah, it's pretty fun down there. It should be. The Bulgarians are all in the Black Sea, a vacation paradise.
Do you think they're morose down there, even with their plum whatever replacing vodka?
Oh, for sure they are.
They're morose, huh?
Yeah, you're like, hey, how's it going? And they're like,
I don't know.
In Romania, they're like, have this apple. And in Bulgaria, they're like, ugh, all apples are bad.
It seems to me that you're generalizing from one Romanian guy who gave you an apple and one Bulgarian man who did not.
No, it was multiple Romanians gave me apples and tomatoes too. It's like, I don't want any tomatoes. They're like, take as many tomatoes as you want.
Chopin never went home to his morose homeland. He just stayed in Paris writing morose music
about it. The rest of the time.
And apparently living very well. I mean, he traveled the continent, but his passport had expired. Like, there were bureaucratic reasons why it would have been difficult for him to get to Poland. And the fact that he had become a European celebrity of captive Poland under the Tsar maybe meant it wouldn't have been super safe for him to go home.
Was he outspoken?
Politically?
I mean, did he like... I
think through his
expressing music. Polish nationalism, which Polishness. The Tsar would not have liked.
Exactly. Like his music was all about the Polish spirit.
Got it.
And the other thing that was making him morose for much of his life is that he had been sickly his entire life.
That'll do it.
It made a lot of people morose back then.
Allergies.
It was worse than that. It was assumed at the time to be tuberculosis, although since then many Chopinologists have wondered, could it have been cystic fibrosis or cirrhosis? There's a rare lung and liver ailment that's genetic that would explain the symptoms he had. But he was acquainted with death because he was a guy who, even in his 20s, did not think he was going to live very long. And in fact, I think he was only 39 when he died. I'm going to say late 30s.
Hmm.
His sister, I'll take a shot at this, Wodwika, something like that, had come from Poland to nurse
Could be
him.
Wodwika, because they do the...
Except it's actually an L and a W. That's why I was trying the Wodwika thing.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. If you speak Polish, please tell me how to say Chopin's sister's name and why you are such a bummer. Why you and all your Slavic brethren are so morose. And why you didn't give John an apple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would it have been so hard?
Would it have killed you?
Country full of apples.
Wodwika comes to Chopin's bedside as he gets progressively ill and finds that he has long suffered from taphophobia. We have done a show about taphophobia, although I'm not sure I knew the word or we would have used it then. That's the fear of being buried alive.
Mm-hmm. So, and was this pre or post? There were already bells on coffins at this point.
Yeah, my memory of that entry is that that's like, there's 16th and 17th century people worried about what if they, because, you know, it was probably more common, not less, back then to just put a dead body in the ground only to have it wake up from its coma and start scratching away at the coffin.
Yeah.
Now we're back to EC Comics territory. This is a Comics Code Authority omnibus. So on his deathbed, he whispers to his sister, "The earth is suffocating. Swear to make them cut me open so I won't be buried alive." So he's requesting an autopsy, even though he's been sick his whole life. And his other request is that his heart should be buried at home in Poland.
Oh, he gets it both ways. Mom, I never came back. Too many parties, but also here's my heart in a box.
I was having a really good time. I never called. I never wrote.
I'm going to guess cystic fibrosis. That's my informed opinion.
Well, that becomes the consensus later, and I'll tell you why. It's actually related to his request to remove his heart. So Chopin is buried in Paris, in Père Lachaise. You can see him today as you leave, you know, I think
hanging out with Jim Morrison.
Jim Morrison and Oscar Wilde. And again, he's also queer-coded because of all those letters he wrote of all the cute young men he wanted to caress. Although, who can say? He actually did have a beloved fiance that he did have young love, apparently a woman. And so a lot of his writings about, you know, a lot of his agonizing over not going back to Paris are these nightmares he's having of his parents being chopped up by Tsarist thugs, his beloved, whatever his fiance's name was, being threatened by, you know, it implies sexual violence, you know, that she's being...
Oh, ravaged.
She's being ravaged and brutalized by Cossacks or whatever. But if he's gay or bi, that's fine. Oscar Wilde is nearby. But his heart, his sister did observe his last request. In 1850, upon his death, she sees that he gets an autopsy and that the doctors remove the heart. They place it in a jar of cognac, which
killing him because he was only in a coma.
He was not dead until they cut out his heart. So it was really what he wanted.
Uh-huh.
Like when you say cut out my heart, they don't say try to cut out my heart so I say ouch. What they mean is like, I just want to make sure I die on the table
right.
And not when I wake up in my coffin. She places the jar of cognac in an urn that has been made of mahogany and oak. And she has to get it back into Poland. And this is tricky because she now has...
She's smuggling
the national spirit of Poland back into Poland.
Whoa.
And she's afraid that something will go wrong either at the Austrian border or later at the Russian border or the Polish border. And so she hides him under her skirt. She sneaks back in a carriage with Chopin's heart concealed in her undergarments.
Racy.
A little bit, except that it's her brother. So,
this is the gothiest guy. Oh, I guess so, yeah.
And delivers her precious cargo to the Holy Cross Church in Warsaw, where Chopin had envisioned his heart being laid to rest.
Poet's Corner?
They don't really have a Poet's Corner, and that proves to be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this kind of a secular tradition that you can put Clement Attlee or Anthony Trollope in Westminster Abbey.
Oh, because it's Anglican instead of Catholic, which is serious business.
Right. In Poland, whatever the, I guess, Catholic? Yeah. Orthodox? Whatever Holy Cross Church.
Polish Catholic.
Yeah. Their Polish Catholic Church points out that Chopin is just a composer.
You got to be a saint.
He has not been beatified. Yeah, exactly. Like, we would bury a saint's heart for sure, but what do we do with this romantic composer?
Can't retroactively...
The things about 19th century Parisian artists, they're not always compatible. They're compatible with Marxism, perhaps, but not always with Catholicism.
Right.
So...
Really at all.
So as a result, not knowing what to do with Chopin's art, they kind of leave it in the catacombs for almost 30 years of the church.
So the church does have catacombs. It is...
Yeah, they're fitted out. They're fitted out for burial.
Right.
And they don't mind putting his remains down there just like they would a beloved city councilman or something. But to put his heart in like a shrine in the church proper would seem to imply that he has a kind of sainthood that they're theologically uncomfortable with.
He was famous, but fame is not the same as like legendary, like ghost of 400 years or whatever.
I think then as now, fame is maybe a counterindicator for saintly behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Not, they don't tend to go hand in hand.
Right, I get it.
But in 1879, enough time has passed that he's become a kind of a secular saint. And
but this is still only, what, 50 years since he died or less?
It's been 30 years since he died. His heart is placed under the big pillar in Holy Cross Church, where, incidentally, spoilers, it can still be seen today, next to a...
How did I miss it?
Next to a plaque from the book of Matthew, where Jesus says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also, or some paraphrase of the same. So there's a biblical quote about one's heart, symbolically, and then Chopin's heart is there. And even under the Tsarist government, which would allow nothing else to be named after, you know, no statues could be erected of a Polish national hero.
Oh.
But they winked at this one in the church. They permitted this one. And so this became kind of a covert center of Polish nationalism.
People would come in pretending to pray, but actually sit there and sharpen their knives?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying they would meet there and discuss how to blow up the commandant's mansion.
But you're not saying they didn't.
They would come in and leave flowers that not just meant, boy, do I love a good Polonaise, but would also mean Viva Free Poland.
Right.
This was a symbolic gesture for Poland and Polishness that would be permitted under the Tsar. In 1918, Poland receives its independence, and then this becomes an official shrine. Like, they no longer had to hide. You could come to Holy Cross Church for the nationalistic fervor of appreciating Chopin. And this became less theologically complicated. The Archbishop of Warsaw said that all our past sings in him, all our slavery cries in him, the beating heart of the nation, the great king of sorrows. So Chopin's short life in exile and his suffering became metonymically symbolic of Poland's own suffering under foreign occupation.
The beating heart of the nation.
And that's literally his heart. You know, it could not be a better symbol. Unfortunately, 1918 is not the end of happy Polish independence.
Like, yeah, it doesn't.
It's not the end of their story.
It?
No, yeah. The story does continue. Chopin, by the way, probably would have been uncomfortable by this. There, in his letters, there are references to his friends speculating that someday he will be to Poland what Mozart is to Germany or Austria. I don't know why they would have said Germany. I guess both, right? He was ethnically German, but Salzburgian born.
Is that
true?
We don't get into that.
We don't care.
No.
Teach the controversy. And Chopin was very uncomfortable with this. He said, no, like that'll never happen.
Was he being coy or would he even like it?
It could have been false modesty, but it did seem like he was viscerally very uncomfortable with the idea that anything about him was quintessentially Polish, maybe because he bailed to Paris and didn't come back when his comrades were dying. You know?
Right. He's a little bit of survivor guilt.
If I were to speculate there. When the Nazis occupied Poland.
Boy, we've gone a whole episode before we brought up the Nazis.
I just blinked through 20 years just to get straight to the Nazis. They, as a matter of policy, banned Chopin.
No, really? Yeah. Oh, because it would still have that power as...
Exactly. Oh, he was still a symbol of a free and independent Poland. And so they knocked down statues. Concerts were banned. You couldn't even play Chopin music.
Crazy.
Crazy.
I mean, of all the things the Nazis did.
Like, it turns out their policies were... We're not as sensible as everyone thought. No, they were
bad administrators,
terroristic invaders of their new satellite nations. The church, Holy Cross Church, had been damaged by Nazi bombings and invasion, and a German priest named Schulze requested that Chopin's heart be removed.
To protect it?
For safekeeping, yeah. I mean, it's also coincidentally in line with the Reich's views on de-shrinifying Chopin. But it was taken by the SS. An SS officer named Heinz Reinefart gave it to the notoriously cruel SS commander Erich von dem Boxelewski, who kept it at headquarters. He had a collection of curios. So
von Boxelewski?
Boxelewski. So he sounds
pretty Polish.
Let's look up Erich von dem.
Oh, I guess Boxelewski, he could be Ukrainian or Slovakian.
His roots were from Zalau. Where's Zalau?
Well, that sounds pretty Polish.
No, it's like S-E-E-L-A-U.
Oh.
I'm going to just Google this in real time. We're not going to edit this out.
Go ahead. Leave it in.
I can't even find it. So I now give up on caring about...
That was so quick.
How Prussian this dude...
It barely lasted.
He is East Prussian, this guy. So he's Polish. Poland adjacent. Yeah. Hey, are you saying Poland and East Prussia are the same?
Yes.
Not anymore. Not anymore. So I guess he, like a lot of these SS guys, your stereotype is that they all have the Ark of the Covenant and stuff on the shelf behind them. Sure enough, this guy kept Chopin's heart in his office. Yeah. But then at one point they arranged for a handover, like that they were going to be such benevolent rulers that they were going to hand Chopin's heart back to the Poles. And they set up newsreel cameras and lights and everything to have this big conference. And right at the moment when the handover was supposed to happen, all the spotlights failed. And
because it was a British air raid.
No, it was just the hand of God. Oh. The Bishop of Warsaw said, ha ha, like it's, you're thank the Lord. The propaganda of these barbarians has failed, basically. And at that point, once the heart had been returned from the SS to the Poles, they got it out of Dodge. They took it out of Warsaw and thought they could keep it safe from the Nazis by taking it to a small town called
Auschwitz.
Milanovec, and hid it at a professor's house.
That seems right.
And then the Archbishop kept it on a piano in his chapel. Why did he have a piano in his chapel? Seems like the spirit of Chopin is really lined up with Polish religion to make it such that you just want to have a piano in your chapel.
What do you think is the thing that it would be most likely of all of the like Ark of the Covenant level artifacts that it might spend some time in your office? Like, given all the things you know...
Like me personally?
Yeah, like, for a while, you brought your Jeopardy goat trophy over here for reasons that were very unclear, and then you left it here, like, oopsie, and then it was here for weeks.
Seems like if it's in your house, you're the SS commandant in this story.
That's the thing. So then I'm the guy who's like, well, I got the beating heart of Jeopardy sitting here on top of my bookshelf.
They say the heart of Jeopardy is still beating. And from what I see, I believe. I'm believing? Does it rhyme with... Does beating rhyme with believe it?
Believe it.
That's not great.
I'm believing. No, from what I say, I'm believing.
From what I see, I'm believing. Beaten,
believing.
Neither way is great.
You know, Huey has poetic license because everybody says that he had a really, sizable third leg.
Is that right?
That's what they say.
I think he's
in the music business.
No, I think you don't have to wonder. I think he's naked in Altman's Shortcuts.
Is he?
And maybe it's a long cut. Who knows?
I never saw it. I never saw any Altman movies.
Also, he lost his hearing.
Huey lost his hearing?
Yeah, that's why he doesn't record anymore.
Oh, I didn't know that.
See, so there's some things that enormous endowment won't get you, I guess.
Now, are we ending Chopin's Heart episode on this Huey Lewis anecdote?
That would be funny, but no.
Okay.
The story is not over.
Thank goodness.
The heart is still hidden in some village somewhere.
Oh, I see. Right, right, right. There's more.
There is more. The heart
But wait, there's more.
His heart will go on, as they say. In 1945, however, the heart was returned and replaced under the pillar at Holy Cross Church, where it can still be seen today.
But then the Russians are involved again.
Luckily, during the Cold War, the heart stayed put. I think the Russians loved Chopin. He was like, you know, even though he went to Paris, he was still a great composer of Eastern European heritage.
Yeah, right? They like classical music there.
They love piano music. You can't say the Russians don't like piano classical music.
I can. Watch me do it.
You'd be say it right now.
The Russians don't like piano classical music.
I have a bell just for incorrect statements about the Russian love for classical piano. But one of the things that had been noticed about the heart, speaking of Huey Lewis, is that it was a weirdly enlarged organ.
Uh-oh.
While it had come out of its little mahogany case during the war.
Oh, so you're not saying it's enlarged because there was a cat living in it?
No. Like, it just seemed that Chopin had a weirdly big heart. And this interested a lot of historians who started to wonder if maybe it wasn't tuberculosis, because that wouldn't have been necessarily a symptom of a tubercular patient, but it was a sign of cystic fibrosis.
Yes.
So the consensus changed to, I bet this is cystic fibrosis. In 2015, I want to say, the Polish government agreed to exhume Chopin's heart to do some research.
Exhume meaning they just lifted up a tile because it was right there.
Right.
Yeah.
To take it out of its box. And in fact, they did not take it out of its jar. At no point did the heart leave the cognac.
Oh, but a doctor could just look at it and say, yeah, yep.
By inspection. By the way, speaking of a restaurant that would serve little bits of Chopin, what about a restaurant that serves you a drink of the cognac?
Oh, and
in which his heart has been resting for 150 years.
You're always replacing the cognac. So at what point is it the ship of Theseus?
Cognac of Chopin. I just think like you could sell Chopin's heart cognac for more than any other rare bottle.
Whoa. I bet you could. I bet that would be like, you go to those whiskey bars where it's like, oh, that's a $50 shot. It's like, yeah, how much is the Chopin heart cognac?
How much Chopin is there in your Macallan or whatever?
And only the biggest assholes in the world would be able to afford it and drink it.
Elon Musk has already purchased.
Yeah.
But without removing the heart, they could study it. And they noticed the most unusual thing was not its enlargement, which could have been many causes. But in fact, it had this weird kind of frosted exterior that they could not explain just by age. Like it appeared that his heart had a coating that it should not have had. And the diagnosis was pericarditis, which is in fact a common symptom of tuberculosis. So the medical consensus on Chopin is now back to he died of tuberculosis.
But no. Tuberculosis.
Yes.
Not cystic fibrosis.
Right.
I see.
And something we never would have known without the Nazis. So huh. I don't, you know, there's really not much of a silver lining to the Nazi invasion of Poland, but it did correctly diagnose Chopin's heart condition.
I mean, it's one of those things where now we know, but we didn't have to.
Right.
And
how did that change?
Yeah, who cares?
Every really? Time they dig up Zachary Taylor to see if he really had arsenic poisoning or similar, I think, well, this will sell some copies of National Geographic, perhaps.
But it's not going to help us treat either cystic fibrosis or tuberculosis better.
Right.
And I don't think there's anyone with cystic fibrosis or tuberculosis who's like, thank goodness that I share this trait with Chopin.
It's 100% trivia nerds. Like this is the same demographic that is served by finding out which way the Titanic sank. You know, you got to examine the wreck or we won't know which tanks blew and which bulkheads held. Doesn't affect anybody, but boy, some trivia dad reading National Geographic is happier now.
But it doesn't even seem like that would never be a question on Omnibus. Why do I keep saying Omnibus when I mean Jeopardy? That would never be a question on Jeopardy, like, what did Chopin die of? Right? It's too bizarre.
It is too bizarre. But, you know, there's a difference between the trivia as facts and trivia as question and answer game. We use the same word for both. But your life can be enriched by many amazing facts that do not make for a good Jeopardy clue.
Right. I can attest to that.
Like, opossums have 13 nipples. That's a great trivia fact. I don't think Jeopardy. See, now I'm doing. I don't think Jeopardy would ever say how many nipples does an opossum have.
Does a possum have if a possum doesn't have nipples?
It would be the form of a question. So the clue would just say 13, and the person would have to ring in and say, ooh, how many nipples does an opossum have?
Right. But the question could be like
13 opossum nipples.
An opossum has a yes. baker's dozen of this.
It would be more like this New World marsupial has only 13 nipples. Like, you put the interesting part in the clue.
Got it.
And make the player come up with the trivial part, no pun intended.
And that concludes Chopin's Heart, entry 218.JB4124, certificate number 31277 in the omnibus. Oh, futurelings, social media is not your friend. It's not my friend. I don't like arguing with people. I like just saying things. And then if you like it, you go, cool. And if you don't like it, you shut up and go somewhere else.
I like not knowing what anyone else is thinking of me.
Wouldn't that be good?
Can you imagine what a recipe for happiness it is to know what everyone thinks about you? It's great.
I always dreamt that I would write articles for magazines and then wouldn't open the mail.
Yeah.
So you write an article from a magazine. Who cares whether people are mad? You don't open your mail. Maybe you have an assistant open it and you tell them, don't show me the mail.
But here's a new viewpoint on this that I've just recently come to. I was reading this new book about the making of the Merriam-Webster dictionary. And the dictionary, of course, gets so much crank mail.
Oh, what is the dictionary wrong about most of the time, according to the cranks?
I mean, it depends on the era. Like, you know, often it's like, the dictionary should not have ain't, or the dictionary should not say that imply can mean infer. Like, how dare you have a descriptivist dictionary?
I see.
But it's also like, the dictionary shouldn't have woke, or the dictionary shouldn't say woke is bad, or the dictionary shouldn't say woke is good, or, you know, any number of things.
Oh, no.
But here's what I learned. They wrote nice letters back to everyone, thanking them for this viewpoint, because this is the kind of feedback that helps them understand and shape the language.
The dictionary wrote them back.
Yes. The dictionary would write a nice letter back to everyone on sending in a weird screed in 1928 on weird onion skin paper, complaining about something, saying, that's not what this means in our town. And they would say, thank you. We'll put this in our files. This helps us get a clearer picture of how Americans speak.
The other day, I was looking at something on Wikipedia, if you can imagine, and I'm scrolling absently with my hand, and I accidentally clicked on the little pencil that meant that I wanted to make an edit. And I never want to make an edit.
Have you ever edited Wikipedia?
Yeah.
Just your entry.
That doesn't work. No, a decade ago, every once in a while, I would say like, well, technically, that's not what they really said. And in every case, I was 100% correct.
History or like...
Yeah, and it was always some... You could see that somebody had written this and they just had a faulty piece of information.
You weren't just doing like the AC/DC entry.
No, it was always something that was like, academic. Well, that's not actually what, what the Basque...
Are you okay with me opening the mail while you just yammer in the outro? Okay.
Of course. And all of a sudden, this window popped up that said, you are banned from editing Wikipedia, and the ban is effective until 2027.
Is this something that had just happened?
No. So I went and it said...
Your IP was banned?
It said, look, this ban was done by this particular Wikipedia editor. And I went and the ban dated back to 2023, at a time when I had made no edits to the internet. 2023, I was like,
were you being implicated in some other IP's malfeasance?
No idea. So
it's somebody in your house. Your daughter has been making unauthorized changes to the Justin Bieber entry.
I don't think so. So I wrote this person and said, hi, you permanently banned me you banned me for 5 years from editing Wikipedia, and I have no interest in editing Wikipedia. This is not a current problem, except I don't know why you would do this, and can you can you please explain? I'm not mad. I'm just confused. And no reply. Not a peep from this guy. Clearly not a dictionary.
The dictionary writes back.
Yeah.
Wikipedia doesn't care.
No, this dingling's like,
I think there's a lot of water cooler dictators running Wikipedia.
But why? I didn't do anything. I wasn't even, unless I accidentally finger touched that.
I think somebody listening has some kind of Wikipedia mod powers.
And is 100%.
And is going to be able to find out how your IP got banned.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me know. Anyway, futurelings, blah, 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 at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick, at Omnibus Project. You can email us to tell us why I'm banned from Wikipedia until 2027 at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can hang out with other futurelings who are probably all high-level Wikipedia editors, wherever futurelings are sold. You can send us mail to P.O. Box 55744 Shoreline, Washington 98155. Ken, it sounds like you're opening the mail over there.
I am a little bit caught up with the mail now. I just turned 51. And and Crystal sent me a birthday present.
What is it?
It's a lava lamp.
Oh, what a cool gift.
It's a really good lava lamp.
Do you think
look how it's got lightning on the base.
Will you display that lava lamp in your home?
I used to display a lava lamp like for the first, I don't know, there was like a 20-year span where I always had a lava lamp going, and I haven't had one in a while. So I think this lava lamp is, but look at the lightning.
Oh, yeah.
It's like monster truck lava lamp.
That's rad. Oh, you didn't tell us what your favorite monster truck is.
Bigfoot? Everyone loves Bigfoot.
It's Bigfoot or Gravedigger are the two that get put up in the hall.
I used to, on Jeopardy, people would ask me in the crowd what my favorite category was, and I would always just say 80s pro wrestling as a gag.
That is pretty funny.
And then the writers thought it would be funny if they just started putting 80s pro wrestling categories into the show.
Oh, no.
So I started saying, that's no longer my gray white whale. So I switched to 80s monster trucks, and then they put 80s monster trucks in. So now I just have to stop saying anything. I can't have an opinion or we'll actually be on Jeopardy. It's like, it's like Heisenberg's uncertainty principle.
But doesn't that make a certain component of the listeners mad because they think because every 5 days I'm online and I see something that's like, well, this was clearly Ken Jennings expressing his political opinions in this question. And I'm like, Ken is not writing the questions.
There is just Jeopardy clickbait every day. Fans outraged.
Outraged.
None of it actually happened, so you don't have to worry.
Thank you.
Dennis, who I assume is the same Dennis you mentioned from, where did you say? Western Massachusetts.
Western Mass. Way out in the woods.
This must be him because he recently spotted this at the Map Center in Pawtucket, Rhode Island.
Does sound like him.
It's pretty great. Like, this is like maybe the single thing we've been sent that I'm the most into, and I'm very annoyed that we're going to be leaving it here because it's even more John Roderick coded.
Well, now, the last time we got a cool map, I said...
Did I steal it?
Well, no. I said, what do you think about this? And you were like, well, I only wrote a book about maps, but because it was like a World War II handkerchief that was like pilots, you were like, you can have
Well, you're not going to believe how John coded this is. This is a map of Western Washington, a Soviet-era map of Western Washington in Cyrillic
kidding. Showing all of the sites where they were. But wait, that doesn't look like it has Bremerton or...
It cuts off.
Or the sub-base,
It must just be some quadrangle because it's just a weird random selection of Washington that has Seattle-Tacoma in it.
Does it have Bangor? Up there by Hood Canal. Is there...
Yes, Bremerton is on it. The whole peninsula is there. But I don't think it's a... I mean, it could be a defense map.
Strategic map.
Is this Hanford over here? What's going on over there? But it cuts off right at Everett.
Huh. Well, Everett's the Navy base. There's no Navy base any further north.
And Kelso. My Cyrillic is good enough to read Kelso and Everett. Centralia.
If it makes it to Kelso, it's got... Is the river there? Does it have Hanford? I mean, it's in Cyrillic, right? So
it's Yakima, so it does not have Hanford.
Oh, it doesn't go all the way to
Tri-Cities. It looks like it ends at Ellensburg and Yakima.
Oh, that's not far enough.
I couldn't read it for a second. Then I realized the backwards R is Ya. So that's Yakima. But check this out. That is great.
Wow. Okay, I got it.
Table's too big. Thank you so much, Dennis. I'm actually going to see if I can, if I leave this here, I'm going to try to like find one of those for sale somewhere.
This is boss. Look at that. And Seattle is, look, they have Renton, except it's Pehtoch. And then
Pehtoh.
Yeah. And then they have Normandy Park down here. They have Three Tree Point. They've got it all.
Do they have your house? Are you a primary target?
They might. No, there's what would have been Boeing. Or no, there's SeaTac. But this was... This is Cold War era. Sure, of course it is. Oh, 1982. This is our peak years, Ken.
I lived in Seattle in 1982. I mean, I moved from Seattle to a Cold War flashpoint.
Well, now what we need to do is cross-reference all the Nike missile bases with this map to see if...
It just must be, this is some quadrangle. Like, I think they must have this imagery at every level.
Yeah.
And you could get the map one over that had Hanford and Spokane, and the map one down that had Portland, and the map one up that had Bellingham. Thank you so much, Dennis.
So cool.
That is extremely, extremely omnibus coded.
Really, really rad. I don't know. I mean, I just, well, yeah, okay. We'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it offline.
John's drooling.
The one other thing I would like to recommend to you, unless you have a whole closet full of Soviet maps to send us, and even if you do, why not give a little bit of your spare change to the Omnibus Project Patreon? And by spare change, I mean any amount of money between $5 and $500 a month.
Do not give more than $500 a month. John would be outraged.
No, if you want to send us like $50,000 a month, if you want to give us Bitcoin, please do. It helps us keep the show on the air. And you're not just doing it out of charity. You get benefits accrue to you that you wouldn't believe. If you haven't listened to our addenda episodes.
You know what, lived. John? If I didn't see them, I wouldn't believe them myself.
Yep.
If I hadn't seen these benefits, that's how generous they are.
I mean, one of the primary benefits is you get the show 2 days early and without ads.
That's pretty good.
I mean, that's worth it right there. That's worth $500 a month right there.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. Where do you want your heart buried, by the way, should the catastrophe come?
Well, my heart belongs in San Francisco.
You left your heart there?
Well, that's where I took it with me, but...
You also leave with it?
Boy, you know, that my heart, where have I left it? So many like places. Like,
if you could be buried here in Seattle, but leave your heart in Alaska somewhere.
Yeah, I don't want that. I'd like somebody to wear my heart in a box around their neck and go to Jerusalem with it.
Specifically Jerusalem.
Think about this. If you're going to have your heart buried separate from your body, could you pick a better place than Jerusalem? Like, that'd be pretty, pretty rocking.
It would. Maybe like the Taj Mahal or something?
Yeah, I guess it's Taj Mahal. Sassafras version.
But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, maybe our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.